If you're in need of quality new tires and have been searching the internet for a good deal, look no further than your local Big O Tires. For a limited time, when you buy three tires, you'll get the fourth free on select set of tires. And because we know that tires can be an unexpected expense, take advantage of no credit needed financing made easy. They work with multiple lending partners, so the financing is tailored to you. Remember that when you buy three tires, you'll get the fourth free. Only at your locally owned Big O Tires, the team you trust.
This is Happiness Solved with Sandy Scarlatta. Today's interview is with Ashley Banyan. Hey everyone, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have been having such a great time talking with people, interviewing them, hearing so many different stories of inspiration, you know, people just pulling themselves up from, you know, when they felt that they were at their lowest point in their life, and then just showing how, you know, you can get through anything. It's just incredible. And I love being able to bring that to my listeners because, you know, we're in crazy times these days. And, you know, while it seems like things are definitely going to get better, we've been through a lot. So I hope you're enjoying some of the guests that I'm having on this show. And I hope that it's helping you find some inspiration and just know that, you know, you're not alone out there. Life is hard sometimes, and, you know, we get through it. So my guest today is Ashley Banyan. Ashley wrote a memoir called A Beautiful Moon Waiting. And I tell you, it is one of the most beautiful covers of a book I've seen in a long time. So Ashley, as a child, she had big dreams of becoming a published author. She put those dreams aside once becoming an English teacher after college, but never fully gave up on them. She has many unfinished manuscripts, but once she sat down and began writing this memoir, she knew she must complete it. Between coaching high school cheerleading, teaching eighth grade English, raising a daughter, and countless other hobbies, she enjoys writing and reading along with photography. She is also a self-proclaimed movie and television enthusiast. Aren't we all right now, Ashley? She is married to her high school sweetheart, Vince, and lives in central Ohio with her family, two horses, one pup, and four cats. Wow. I hope you enjoy this interview. Hey, Ashley, how are you?
Hi there. I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to hear about your story and your book. And so let's see. You're also a school teacher, which you had told me about. So this is after a full day of teaching. So I really appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Of course. What age group do you teach?
I teach eighth grade English language arts. And then I have one ninth grade English class too. So eighth and ninth graders.
That's not a bad age. Yeah, I was going to say that's not a bad age. I would think elementary and high school would be much harder, but.
Yeah, most days. I would say junior high is its own little breed. The kiddos are changing a lot, but I enjoy them. They're fun. They're that middle group where, I don't know, they're not too independent, but I don't know. They're still fun. I enjoy it.
That's great. I always just think back to when my son was that age, you know, and I really enjoyed that because it was, you know, the teen years were a challenge. You know, now he's in college, so it's a whole different set of issues.
Yep. I get that. I taught fifth grade for a little while, so this was a little different, but I enjoy my eighth graders. They're very cool. They're cool kids.
That's great. Well, I certainly really admire your courage to be a school teacher because that's that's really tough.
Thank you.
But thank you.
It can be. For sure.
All right. So I don't really know a whole bunch about your journey other than the little snippets that you've told me about. So tell me about your story, because it sounds like it's really inspiring.
Okay. Well, my husband and I, first off, are high school sweethearts, which isn't super normal nowadays, but we went to small little town.
That's incredible.
I know.
I'm my second husband, so you know. Had the first one for 20 years. So when my husband asked me to marry him, I was like, well, I did it for 20 years with somebody that you know, we're better off as friends. I said, so I think I could do it another 20 years. I'm like, yeah,
I could
do 20 years with you.
I love it. So we went to high school. Actually, this is, okay, I don't know, kind of embarrassing almost to the point. We actually went to kindergarten through 12th grade together.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we're those people.
That's awesome. You know, hey, more power to you.
I guess. So we're from a really, really small town in rural Ohio, central Ohio, probably about 35, 40 minutes from Columbus. And we went to school together, started dating in high school off and on kind of thing, you know, teenagers. And then we ended up after graduation actually going to the same college together. We didn't really plan it at first. He was looking at Wisconsin and some other places. And then I was like, I'm staying close to home. It was just, I'm kind of a homebody. I'm close with my family. And so my friends that were really close around here. And so we both ended up going to the same college, and he wasn't sure what he wanted to major in. And I've known since third grade that I wanted to be a teacher. And so he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, you know what I'm doing. And so he's like, oh, maybe I should try that. I'm like, you're going to try that? Oh, okay. So whatever. But he started taking classes and he loved it. And so he actually teaches as well. So he's a high school computer teacher. He loves nice. Computer science, and I'm not the technology person, but he is. So he worked at a different school and I worked here. And then shortly after college, everyone was, when are you getting married? And I'm like, whoa, slow down. And around our area, you know, a lot of people get married shortly after college. And I just wasn't there yet. I'm sure it was just because I was scared. I have anxiety, and I've had it for years. But I guess when I was younger, it wasn't something you get diagnosed with. It was kind of something you just get over. And so we waited a couple years, and then finally his dad was also dealing with, he was diagnosed with cancer, and he was fighting that for a while. And
oh, no.
I wanted him to kind of spend some time at home with his family too. And I told him, like, you know, one of these days you're gonna be happy that you did that. So his father ended up passing away 12 years ago now. Mm. So quite a while ago. And we got engaged shortly after, got married. We were both 26, and literally at our wedding reception, people were said, okay, so when are you going to have kids?
I'm like, don't you hate that?
I did. I'm like, okay, I love you, but I hate you right now.
I'm like, I know. No. That's always the first question. And now I know better. And, you know, with me marrying my current husband, I was 50. It was like, there's no mm-hmm. question. We're not having kids.
There you go, right? I know. I was like, whoa. Okay. But I mean, I always knew I wanted kids, but I guess ever since high school, and actually one of my very best friends reminded me of this before I was writing my book, which I'm happy she did because I remembered it all very vividly. But she's like, don't you remember when we were in 10th grade and we were, well, this will show my age, but we were at the Y2K New Year's for 2000 in 10th grade, and we were in Disney World. And we were sitting there watching the laser light show, and there was this cute little baby in front of us. And I looked at her and I said, you know, one day I want to adopt. I want to adopt a little, I just have a feeling I'm going to adopt a little girl from China. And she said, well, that's weird. No one, like, I don't know where it came from. I just have always wanted, I don't know. It's just something I've always thought of. But then I kind of just forgot about it for a while. And then when we were talking about starting a family a couple years after we got married, I said, this is going to be weird, but I think I want to adopt. You know, probably should have had that conversation before we got married, but I said, you know, I really just want to. And he was like, okay, cool. And we just started, you know, looking into it, but nothing too major. It was more just looking into some things to see how it worked. And finally we hit 30, and I'm like, okay, if we're gonna start a family, maybe we should go ahead and start, because people have been for 4 years now not leaving us alone about it. So he's like, well, do you want to go the biological route? Do you want to go, you know, the adoption route first? And what sealed the deal was my brother had gone to Japan, and he had an extra ticket because my mom and dad were going to go with him just to see it. And my dad couldn't go. And my dad's like, it's all paid for. Do you want to go? And with my anxiety, I was like, no, I can't leave the country. He was like, Ashley, it's okay if you don't want to go, but it's free. It's a free trip to Japan. I'm like, okay, that would be stupid to not go just because I'm terrified of flying. So
it's once in a lifetime for some people.
I know. And that's what I was afraid of. I'm like, what if I never get this opportunity again? So I'm like, let's do it. And as terrified as I was, and boy, was I scared on that plane. We jumped on a plane and I fell in love with Japan. And so as soon as we got home, I started researching like Japan adoption because I'd never heard of Japan adoption before. And so I start researching it and this is kind of embarrassing. I didn't tell Vince at all. Like I didn't want him to think that I was, I didn't want him to think I was getting my hopes up over something that probably wasn't going to happen because he knows that once I set my sights on something, I do it or I try or I obsess about it until either I figure out how to do it or I get upset that I didn't make it happen. So I was researching and there were two agencies that worked with Japanese adoption. So reached out to both of them. One was in California and the other one was in Washington State. And the one in California said, well, it's a very, very small program. And they said, we probably won't be open up for another 5 or 6 years if we open back up again to any, applicants.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. So I reached out to the other one and this amazing lady, I cannot sing her praises enough. She says, it's probably 1 to 3 years that we're going to open up. But she's like, if you're not 100% ready yet, it might be perfect timing for you. And I'm like, okay. She's like, reach out anytime. And I did. I think I emailed every couple months. I probably completely annoyed her, but she was wonderful every time. Every time I spoke to her, she was, we've had so many referrals. But anyway, years and years went by. And finally, we're like, okay, it's been 3 years. We're going to have to figure out what we want to do. I guess it'd been 2 years because we were 32. And I emailed her one last time and I said, okay, do you have any idea if the Japan program is going to open? And she's like, we're hoping this next spring. And this was January of 2016. And so she said, we're going to open it up in the spring, we think, but it's just really going to depend. And so finally, Vince and I were like, why don't we just do China? That's what I had been thinking all along. So they had a China program. In April, I reached out to her and I said, okay, we've decided we're going to go the China route. And she's like, oh, well, not to throw a wrench in your plans, but I was just getting ready to email you next week. Japan is going to open up for 10 more applicants in May. And I'm like, oh, so that was the sign we needed. And we signed up in May. And from there, we took off. And it took in international adoption, the international adoption world, a year is not a long time. And within a year and 3 months, so maybe 15 months, we had a baby home. And that was fast. But it felt like the longest year of my entire life. Because as soon as we signed the papers, and this for some isn't going to register, and that's okay. And I say that in my book a few times. But I had a dog. I'm a dog person. I'm an animal lover to the extreme. And I had this one dog who a friend of mine later on in the journey said, I think he was your heart dog or your soul dog or whatever, where you just have this really big, strong connection. And not a month after we signed the papers and we're getting ready for the home study, which for those in the adoption world know, it's like you have this long, tedious paperwork and you have someone come in and look at your home and make sure that you are approved and they do your interview. But right after we started that process, he was diagnosed with kidney disease. And they said, you'll be lucky if he has 6 months to a year. And oh, no. I was like, oh, great. Along with all the expenses and the Japan fees were astronomical. They were,
I'm sure,
higher than most just because it's an infant program. So the birth moms, the first moms actually have a say in where their kids go. And I love that because I wanted her mom to know that she was going to be okay and to have just a choice. And I just felt like that was important to me. And so I loved that about the program. But because of that, they do a lot of work with taking care of the parents and the birth moms. And so it was, we had to save $45,000. And I'm like, okay, now we've got about probably $5,000 to $10,000 worth of vet bills that we're going to have to figure out how to pay. Because I wasn't just going to say, well, let's let him suffer for the next 6 months. So on top of that, then my grandpa got diagnosed with cancer and he was my last living grandpa. And he passed away within a couple months right after Christmas. And then my aunt was diagnosed with cancer. Luckily, she has beaten it and has been doing fairly well. But it was that. And then Vince's uncle, my husband's uncle, had and is still fighting, was diagnosed with cancer. It was just a lot in 1 year. And I guess for someone with anxiety and someone who doesn't deal well with death, it was not a good year. And then throughout the whole process, we had a lot of ups and downs where they kept saying, you know, hey, we've got a baby that was born. They would give us a referral or get close to giving us a referral. And then something would happen and they would either choose a different family, which I loved because I loved them getting a choice in that. But it was just heart-wrenching to always see, hey, you're getting ready to fly out to Japan. And then I have bad news. I mean, it happened 18 times, which was unprecedented. It had never happened before in their program. And of course, ours was that program. So Stormy, my dog, he had passed away during that time. My grandpa. Oh
my gosh, you were just hit with, it sounds like 2020.
It was all at once. Yes, right? 20, the year. Yeah. So it was just a bad year. And I, at one point, I looked at Vince and I said, I don't know if we can keep doing this. I was like, I can't keep being, what was the word I used? Just let down over and over. Like, again, I can't do it. And then all of a sudden we get an email out of the blue and there she was. And it was not expected. She was not a baby. The birth mom was not in her, the birth moms kind of, when they're pregnant, sign up with the program because they know ahead of time and then they're taken care of. They're counseled to make sure this is what they really wanted. And she wasn't in the program. So we knew that the next baby that was due was not until the middle to end of August, and it was July. And so we knew it would be several weeks before we would hear anything. And then all of a sudden, one night we get an email. It was midnight our time because it was in Washington State. So it was earlier there. And the wonderful lady from the program, she had emailed me at like 9 o'clock her time. She's like, I'm at home, but I cannot wait. I need to know something. And she's like, the baby's not a newborn. She's almost 3 months old. Are you okay with that? And I'm like, well, heck yes. Of course I'm okay with that. Why not? It's 3 months. Absolutely. If we were going to go the any other route, it would have, I mean, our babies would have been over a year old. So we were like, yes. And it happened lightning fast. Within 3 weeks, we had her in our arms and we were in Japan. And it was just like, I don't know, the way, and it's explained in my book, but in the way that it worked out, the timeline, everything was very, very well played out, that there were just too many coincidences. The day before, a few days before Stormy, my dog, passed away was May 11th, 2017. And he had an amazing day. He was out barking and playing. And I thought, well, maybe he's turning the corner. You know, maybe he's going to have a few more months left, because I just really wanted to get a picture of him and our baby together and a family picture. And 4 days later is when he passed away. Mm. And our daughter was born on May 11th, 2017.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, it was like he was just telling me, you know, hey, it's okay. It's going to be okay. But I didn't get it then. But.
Oh, you're going to make me cry now.
Ooh, sorry.
That's okay. Wow.
That's a long overview. Sorry.
No, that's all right. That's a lot to take on and to handle, and so many mixed emotions.
I think that was the hardest part, was, you know, dealing with the ups and the downs. And, you know, you want to be excited about certain things, but at the same time, in the other part of your life, you're dealing with grief and anxiety, and you're trying to bottle all of that up. So you don't really get to grieve, because you're trying to go, I think we were going like five different directions. I mean, I'm a cheerleading coach and I'm a school teacher. So I was trying to do that. And I was, you know, trying to stay sane and trying to take care of Storm and trying to grieve my grandpa and making sure my aunt was okay and making sure Vince's uncle was okay. And it was just so much. But I was trying to enjoy it because I wanted to enjoy the process, but it was just so, so difficult. And then I think with adoption itself, there's mixed emotions too, because, you know, you grieve with your child, because even though she was 3 months old, she had already lost her first mom that she had known for 2.5 months. She was then with a nanny and caretakers for two weeks while they were waiting on us. And then they were ripped from her. And then she's with people that look completely different, obviously. And I think it was just so much. And I mean, she grieved. I could tell she was crying, but overall, she adjusted so much better than I thought. But my heart was just so broken for knowing because I'm old enough to know everything that was being quote unquote taken from her, her culture, her, you know, her first family. And it was just, it was gut wrenching for me, but I was also so thrilled to have her in my arms. It's the strangest, surreal feeling. It's like hard to even to put into to words, honestly. It was just one of those things where I'm like, how do you even begin, you know, to process this? How do you start to feel what she's going to be feeling one of these days? There's actually a paragraph I can read you in my book if you want.
Oh, fantastic. I would love
that. Where I kind of write out a little bit of those feelings. So
I would love that. Yeah.
Okay. I think as adoptive parents, it's important to address that loss. Do I think adoption should be celebrated? Yes. Is adoption beautiful? Yes. But adoption starts with a tremendous loss, and it is impossible to fully comprehend that before the moment your little one is placed into your arms. Your heart breaks when she cries and grieves for everything she has lost. You smile when she smiles at you, while hoping that means she is beginning to accept you. You feel such gratitude and complete and utter love when you hold her at night while she's fast asleep peacefully in your arms because she feels safe, and you are so incredibly thankful to be holding her, finally, after months or even years of waiting. But you also grieve her for her because you know what she is, what has been ripped away from her, and the importance of those feelings is definitely not lost on you. So it was just hard.
So tell me about the birth mother. Like, why did she go into this program? What were her circumstances?
Okay, so we have a lot of details, which is abnormal for international adoption. And I'm thankful for that because, you know, one of these days I'll be able to tell my daughter, her name's Everly, I will be able to tell Everly everything I know. And I'm very, very thankful for that. And I even have a couple pictures of her mom, and I'm thankful for that too. But the basic gist, without giving, you know, too much of, you know, her personal information away, was that she didn't have a very good upbringing. She didn't have a lot of people on her side, and she had found a man and they were in love, and she got pregnant. And when he found out, he was not happy about the situation and left her. And so therefore she was on her own. And in Japan, it's an amazing, beautiful, rich cultural place. I love it there. I can't say enough about it. But they do have some practices that are a little bit what Americans, I guess, would consider a little outdated when it comes to women and raising a child on your own and out of wedlock.
It's a culture. It's a culture.
Right. It's just, yeah, it's their culture. And, you know, it is what it is. So she didn't know about adoption too much because it's kind of, it's not something that they do a lot. And if they do adopt over there, they don't broadcast it. So sometimes the child might not even know that they're adopted.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, she didn't want to go that route. And so she thought, I'm just going to raise her. And she tried and she tried. And she said that she felt that she deserved more. She deserved a better life and that she wasn't doing well enough for her. So she did research on, and she was didn't even want to admit this, but she did research on orphanages to see if any of them would be able to give her, you know, more. And then she didn't want to, though. She didn't want this her daughter to be obviously put in an orphanage. So she researched international adoption and adoption agencies. And the agency in Japan showed up and she called them, or well, she emailed them. And they emailed back and they went to her place. They flew out to her home and they counseled her for a day or two. And she was still content. And they showed her actually our file and if she would be comfortable with us or if she wanted to go another route, because our agency also worked with an agency in Canada, or if she wanted domestic adoption there in Japan. And she said not domestic because she just felt like she would have too much of a stigma being adopted. And she wanted someone that truly had been just waiting for a child. And so she looked at our file and chose us. And from there, it was obviously destined to be. I mean, I'm not going to say that, you know, she was happy about it, but she was relieved and she was thankful that she found a family to take care of her.
So, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about your dog, and it just made me, I was getting choked up because I've had to put two of my pets down, you know, in my adult life.
Yeah.
And I actually, after I got divorced, I had two dogs and I was gone from the house 10 hours a day. And it was right after I met my husband. and we just started dating. And he convinced me, he goes, no, you need to be selfless and not selfish and find the dogs a better home. And I gave them up for adoption. And it was just like the most devastating thing. Not that this is compared to giving up your baby, because there is no comparison. But what made me think you're talking about your dog is like, they're your babies. Your dogs are your kids.
Yeah, and he was.
And it was such a relief finding a family that took them both, because the dogs were brother and sister.
Oh,
but they were like 18 months apart. And it just was just comforting for me to know that they just had a better life than they would be sitting in a townhouse 10 hours a day by themselves. You know?
Right. But, and I totally get that. And putting myself in her shoes, I'm like, I don't even know how you make a decision like that. I mean, how selfless that she was. I don't know that I could be that selfless. So I have nothing but love and admiration for her. And I pray that one day we find her and we get to meet her, which is an option. We know, mm-hmm. Name and stuff. So whenever Lee's a little older, we're going to talk to her and see what we can do. But I'm nothing but gratitude and respect for the decision that she made. And obviously love, because how can I love my daughter and not her mom? So.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible. So what else is there about your story that you'd like to share? Because I know there's got to be a lot more to it.
Well, I will say that during the process, a couple of things good that came out of it was I finally realized after losing Stormy, I was not dealing well with my grief and my anxiety. And I mean, I felt like I was not myself, kind of like a shell of myself. And I finally looked at Vince and I'm like, I'm not okay. I think I need to look into this seeing a doctor thing. I need a break. And so I went to my doctor and he says, luckily he's a great guy who was very open to listening to me go on and on about grief and anxiety. And I'm like, I don't know that I have something that needs to be medicated all the time, but I need something right now that's going to help me. So he did some blood work and tests because I had a lot of other symptoms and found out I have a hypothyroidism, so a low thyroid. And he said, that causes anxiety to be worse. It causes your fatigue to be worse. It causes depression to be worse. He's like, that could be part of this.
Oh,
so I'm like, okay.
For sure.
So not only was I dealing with it mentally, but then my body was like fighting against me, like making it all worse. So I'm like, well, at least that gives me something. So he's like, why don't we put you on medicine? And he's like, and why don't we go ahead and put you on a low dose of, it wasn't fully anxiety medicine. It was used for something else, but it helps anxiety. So he's like, let's put you on that. And that way it won't disrupt the adoption. You're mentally still stable. It's fine. He's like, let's just get you back to normal. And during all that, he said, you really need to be doing some, I'm very big on like homeopathic stuff too. I try to do organic everything. And he said, you need to get to a point where you can relax. Because I told him, I'm like, I try to meditate, but I cannot turn my brain off, which I just cannot do it. And he's like, we're going to learn. So I started getting more into meditation and I started jogging because I know that that's a healthy way to, get your endorphins going. And so that really helped. Not only did it help me lose some of the weight from the hypothyroidism, but it helped put me in a better space mentally. So whenever I was feeling stressed, and I still do it now, not as much in the cold weather, but I use the treadmill, but I jogged harder, I jogged faster, and it just kind of, it helped a lot. And I was never a believer because I was always the one that said, if I'm running, you better run too because someone's chasing me because I don't run. But now I do as much as I can. And I love the way it makes me feel. And I feel like it's just a healthier alternative, but I'm still getting, I'm getting help. There's no, and I'm finally to a point where I'm like, there's no shame in taking care of your mental health the same way as taking care of your physical health, which
absolutely
took me a long time to get there. I mean, the stigma around mental health is astonishing sometimes because it's like this embarrassment that we put on ourselves. And I think part of me had to get through that. And of course, the anxiety of getting through the anxiety of saying I need help. But I did. And I'm like, I was at a point where I'm like, I have to, not just for myself and my family, but we were about to bring home, well, we were hoping and we did, but a baby. And to bring home a child, I need to be my best self. So I guess the good that came out of all of the grief and trauma was I finally reached out and I was like, I need help. And I got it. And I'm happy to say that I still have some moments, but I know how to manage it. I know how to control it. And I'm much in a much better place than I was 4 or 5 years ago. So thankfully.
Thank goodness for that. Yeah. And running, yes. Running is amazing. And I used to be a runner. I don't do it very often anymore. Just trying to save my knees as I'm getting older. Yes. But yeah, I used to, you get into a zone.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. It took me a few minutes, but once I get there, I feel you just have that, what they call it, like a runner's euphoria. I was always like, yeah, that's not going to happen. But you do. I'm like, I just got to get to that point.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. So what is the name of your book?
Okay, so my book is called, and this is a whole nother story, but it's A Beautiful Moon Waiting. And the reason for that is that our daughter's given name, because obviously her mother had named her, is Mizuki. And Mizuki, when you translate it to English, means beautiful moon. Aww. So yes, I've always loved the moon. My mom and I have always like laid out and watched, looked at the stars and studied the moon. And we've always had that fascination. So when we heard what her name meant, I'm like, okay, this could not be more perfect.
You have so many things that have been in alignment that it truly, I always say everything happens for a reason. And I love hearing stories like this because it really just, this was just meant to be.
It cemented my faith. I think that's what helped. That what happened to a positive that came out of that was watching it unfold during the time. I'm going to be honest. I was angry at times. I lost faith. I consider myself a Christian and I was ticked. And there were times that I'm like, I don't understand. Like, why is this happening? And then when it unfolded, I was like, okay, I will never doubt again. 'Cause it was just, it was insane how things laid out. Actually, the day she was born a year prior was the day we sent in our adoption paperwork. So that was another thing that I'm like, okay, that's weird.
May well, 11th, and that's incredible that it happened that quickly because it can take,
it can
take years. Yeah,
it can. So I mean, in the long run, we know how fortunate we were. It was just during the time with everything, I just, you know, my anxiety and grief, they were just lying to me. And it was just one of those things of, you know, how do I get through this? I actually, if you have a moment, I have my book.
Oh, absolutely.
I have another little paragraph here that I kind of talk about how it feels to me. So I say, grief is like an ocean. You feel in control. The water is hitting your ankles. And when the waves roll in, they hit just at your knees, never higher. You can stay on your feet as long as the water stays below your knees. Then when you least expect it, a wave comes along and knocks you down. You didn't see it coming, you didn't prepare, and now you're on the ground, trying to catch your breath, praying you can get back up on your feet before the next wave hits. It was just over and over again. So
yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, and that really is so true just in life in general, you know?
Yes.
I always say life happens while we're busy making other plans, you know?
Yes, I do. I do love that quote, actually, because it's so true. And it's so true.
when I'm feeling playful, I'll demonstrate. I'll say, yo, you got to be a surfer girl, you know, ride the waves.
yep. There we go.
All of my quotes aren't my original ones. I picked them up from other people. So I can't say that was my original one. But I love that because it's like, really, you know, I mean, that's kind of life. You know, we have to ride the waves. And
it is. You just got to prepare the best you can and get back up. So I guess that's all we can do, right?
So how's it been like since you brought your daughter home?
Good. Actually, I have to say that we are very, very, very fortunate that we all adjusted really well. She is 3 and a half. She'll be 4 in May. And so she is a sassy, sassy little girl. She is.
She's a girl.
Feisty. She's a girl.
it's all and, right.
yep. All I keep saying is, I will be thankful one of these days that her favorite word is no. Right now, not so much, but I'll get through it. As long as she stays strong and independent and says no a lot and is not a follower, I can make do. So, but no, things have been really good. I'm fortunate that we have a great family system that my mom stays home. So she watches her every day while we go to work.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's been wonderful. And right now with COVID, of course, we still have some cheer games and stuff. I coach cheerleading and my husband actually helps coach the boys basketball team. So we're busy all the time, but my mom gets to watch her. And then, you know, Vince's mom is great with her and loves her. And she's got one cousin who is 8 months older than her. So they are like BFFs. We haven't had been as together quite as much lately just because of COVID, but we try to keep in touch as much as possible, but they are inseparable and they'll get to go to kindergarten and everything together, which will be amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited that they'll be together. And then she has now two baby cousins too. She's the only girl out of all the cousins, but hey, I'm like, you know what? It's okay. She's got this. At least she'll learn how to roll with the boys.
I know. I had three brothers, so I tell you.
All right.
You
know. Yeah, I have a brother. It's not a bad thing. That's all. Yeah, but she's learning quick. She's so independent. I love watching her grow. The one thing we're starting to see is her personality come out more and more. And so, like, we're constantly thinking, I wonder if her first mom did that. You know what I mean? So, like, little things that I wish we knew more of. But, you know, it's just the coolest thing to see her and her first mom. I have to say, we have a whole chest of stuff that her first mom wanted her to have when she gets older.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So she forwarded it to the agency and they sent it to us. So I have a whole chest of stuff that her mom had given her.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. She started recently going through it and we're just now hitting the age where I'm like, how do we go now about telling her? I mean, obviously, when she gets older, she's going to see the differences.
Right. But I was going to say at some point, probably sooner than later, she's going to look at you and Vince and say, yes. I don't look like you.
Yes. Yes.
Why do I look she's so starting, different?
Yes. She is starting now that she'll look at dolls and she has a variety of dolls, all different races, all different ethnicities, just because I want her to have all of that. And she'll pick out a blonde doll with curly hair or straight hair, because depends on the day for me. But she'll say, Mama. And she'll say, looks like you. And I'm like, yes, it does. And then she'll find one that looks like her. And she'll say, this one looks like me. And I'm like, okay, she's noticing. So I've mentioned Japan, actually, my sister-in-law and one of my best friends for Christmas this year got her three different Japanese-inspired books about the country and the foods. And they're so cool. So we've been sitting down now that she's old enough to start comprehending. We've been sitting down and reading through them and I'm mentioning things like, you know, you were born in Japan and, you know, mommy and daddy came out and we picked you up when you were just a little baby. She doesn't fully get it yet, but I kind of want her to just understand that that's okay, that can make a family too. So we read a lot of adoption books. She doesn't quite get it yet, but I just don't want it to ever be one of these things where I wait too long and then it's like, wait, what? So we're working on it. Actually, there's another part if you want, if I can read that from my book where I talked a little bit about that. So it says, there will be days in our future when we will have to answer some hard questions from Everly. And we are preparing ourselves for the days ahead. She will want to know why her first family could not raise her. She will want to know why we chose to adopt. She might have hard feelings to process and attempt to work through and understand. I am, in a way, dreading those conversations, but I will not shy away from them either. We will be open and honest with her and hold nothing back. She deserves that. She deserves the world. I just hope and pray that we raise her to know how strong and beautiful she is. I hope and pray that she can feel how unconditionally we love her every single day. And more than anything, I want her to know that her past is a part of her story she could not control, but her future can be anything that she wants it to be.
I love that. I actually, you have that on the back of your book, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I do. It's one of my favorite quotes.
Yeah. It's like, wow, that's incredible. You know, a really good friend of mine and his wife weren't able to have a second baby, so they chose adoption. And she was born here in the States. It was like a teen pregnancy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And but they've always been open and honest from her since she was little. And I think she's now, I forget how old she is now, but, you know, she's just has adjusted so well. And,
yeah,
you know.
I think that's key, really, is I don't want her. I know she's still going to have those moments, but I want her to always know from the beginning, you know, this is not something that you should be embarrassed or ashamed about, that this is something that this is how our family was created and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And so I'm also very fortunate that our agency has since stopped Japanese adoptions for now because there's been some adjustments to our system and theirs. But we have a very, very close-knit group of Japanese families, well, families that have adopted Japanese children from our agency. And I am so thankful for their friendships. Like, it's our whole little community. So, like, she'll FaceTime some of the girls, and aww, it's amazing. We're all connected in a group. It's awesome. And we've met up a couple times with some of them, and we're going to have a big reunion once COVID's done. I've been trying to get out to Seattle because there's a few families out there, and that's where our agency is. And the woman from our agency, Kelsey, I can't wait to actually meet her, you know, face to face. It's been years of us talking, but, you know, so we're going to take a trip out there and meet five different families that have little ones all around Everly's age and older. And then, our agency director. So I'm super excited about that, but I just think it's really, really important to keep her connected to these other children, because then she's so she won't feel as alone. She's got someone else to mirror her and to have the same kind of story that she does. Yeah. So we're fortunate.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, I was just thinking, whether it's your biological child or your adopted child, as long as you're giving them that unconditional love, that's all that matters. I mean, there's children that, biological children, and they're treated poorly.
That is true. And as a teacher, I see it sometimes.
I'm sure you do.
It breaks my heart. So yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate to work in an amazing district, but I mean, we see it everywhere. So
I mean, we're all parents are not given a manual. When you have a baby, you know, we're going to make mistakes, you know, you try to do the best you can. But I think as long as you've got that foundation for her, she's going to thrive.
I hope so. That's our goal. We're hoping to start teaching her some Japanese here in the next year or so. And well, we have to learn it too. So we're going to learn it together. I know like three words and I'm like, this is not good. We eat some Japanese food here and there, and we are going to take her back. Our goal is, if we can save the money and COVID's hopefully under control in a year or two, we're going to try to take her to Japan when she's a little bit older. So 5 or 6, probably. So maybe 2 years. Yeah. We want to go back and meet the director over there from that agency again. And we're friends on Facebook. So, she's amazing. So I'm super excited to, and just take trips there all the time with her, which is great. So.
Yeah. And that'll be another good way to learn the language if you're immersed.
Yes. I'm hoping that we will learn some before we go and then practice it while we're there and see how we do, which we'll see. Fingers crossed. I don't know. But yeah, speaking about the manual, I tell you, when we were in Japan, I have to say that becoming a parent anywhere has to be an impossible task. I mean, I get it, but getting to be a first time mom and dad on the other side of the world in a hotel room where you don't speak the language. Oh my God. It was a nightmare at times. I'm like, what did we do? What are we doing? I don't even know what to do right now. Luckily Japan is such an amazing and safe and beautiful country that it was okay. But it was just, I guess in America, you don't realize that we have, you know, changing tables and things like that everywhere. Well, in Japan, there are certain parts of the country where you don't really take infants very often. And we weren't aware of that. And we were wanting to sightsee, you know, I mean, we're in Tokyo. Let's see it all. Right. So we were at Shibuya Crossing. And for those not aware, it's like Times Square of, you know, Tokyo. And so we're crossing and there's this huge, one of the largest Starbucks in the world is there. And we're like, let's go. So we go and we're, at this point, you know, she's strapped onto Vince, and luckily she'd been strapped onto me all day. So he had her, and because we had our little carrier, you know, keeping her connected with us. And she, all of a sudden, Vince goes, Ashley, I think we need to go find a changing table. And I'm like, why? He's like, come here and smell her. I'm like, okay. And so I do. And he's like gagging. And I'm like, oh, come on, be a man. You know, I'm like, stop it. And then I go over and I'm like, okay, this is really bad. So we look around and we go to the bathroom and there's no changing tables. And
not even in Starbucks?
No. And I was like, what are we going to do? And my mom, luckily, she had tagged along with us because she, and her words said, I can't miss this circus that's going to happen, because she knew Vince and I were like, it was going to be hilarious. So I'm thankful she came, because I was like, how do I do this mom thing? Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. So she was with us and she goes, well, let's just go back to the back of Starbucks. We're just going to have to... It was connected to a bookstore. She's like, let's go back to the back aisle behind these bookshelves. I'll lay my coat down and we'll change it real quick. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to get kicked out. And some nice but stern Japanese man security guard is going to take us into jail. Like, this is going to be bad because people don't do this in Japan. And she's like, we're Americans. It'll be fine. I'm like, okay. So we go back and we start to unstrap her. And I'm gagging now, too. And my mom is laughing at us like, what is wrong with you two? And then we see it. It was one of those what we call blowouts.
Oh, yeah.
It was all over Vince, her whole outfit. And we're like, okay, there's nothing we can do. We literally, against Vince's better judgment, strapped her back into Vince. And he goes, no. And I said, nope, we got to go. So we get into a taxi. And the poor guy, my mom sits in the front with him. And Vince and I sit in the back with her strapped to us. And we're back there gagging. And the poor man just keeps looking back at us, giving us these looks of like, what is that smell? Everly is screaming and Vince and I are gagging and my mom is laughing hysterically in the front seat. And this guy's probably thinking, these crazy Americans, what is their deal? And why do we have a child that's Japanese? And so we make it to the hotel. We strip her down. Vince throws his shirt away. Like, he wouldn't even keep it. We had to wash the, oh, it was awful. It was awful, but it was hilarious now. But at the time I'm like, this is the most embarrassed I think I've ever been in my entire life. But
oh, wow.
We made it through. But it was just one of those funny moments that now I can look back and be like, oh, yeah, that was my first day of motherhood. Great. But at least it'll be something funny to tell her.
Exactly. Remember when.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, so, fun times.
Yeah. So, Ashley, is there anything else you want to share with the audience today?
Nothing much about our story. I think if you get the book, there's plenty more details in there, and there's some emotional, sad parts, obviously, because I do talk about everything. I talk about how I felt. You know, there were times when I would sit at the bottom of the shower and just cry. I mean, sometimes we just have to, right? And yep. So, I mean, I mentioned that. I talk about working through it. I talk about how, I mean, there are parts in here that I almost was ashamed to write. And then I thought, no, I just, if I'm going to write it, I mean, this was kind of therapeutic for me in a way too. So I'm like, if I'm going to write it, I'm going to write it. And I'm just going to be serious and I'm going to put it out there. I mean, even some of my best friends that have read this said, I had no idea it was that bad. And I'm like, well, it's because I hid it. You know, I didn't want everybody to know that I was a basket case. Well, that's how I felt. You know, I mean, I was at the bottom of the barrel, just clinging to like everything. I look at pictures now and I'm like, I can see it in my eyes. Like, I don't even look like myself from that year that we were taking pictures of, hey, here's our adoption paperwork. I mean, I just don't look alive in time. So, but it's in here. And then, but don't worry, there's the funny stuff too. There's the whole blowout scene in detail. There's some other things. One of our poor taxi guys almost hit a guy, but it was fine. He survived. And it was an interesting time in Tokyo, but there's the good, the bad, the ugly, but it's a story. It's a true story. I've gotten good reviews and hopefully anyone who reads it will like it as well. But it's available on Amazon right now in paperback, but it's also in Kindle edition. So if you have a Kindle or Kindle Unlimited, actually, if you have that, it's free to read there. And then it's also on Barnes & Noble in a hardback or a paperback. So there's plenty of options there. So
that's fantastic. And I'm glad you went into that a little bit more about the variety that's in the book, because this is the type of thing that maybe somebody who's been struggling with getting pregnant or struggling with, the, you know, the whole adoption, you know, your story is letting people know that you can reach those lows and still come out of it, because everything's always going to work out. And
it is.
You're a perfect example.
I lost that faith a few times, but by the end, I was like, all right. And every time I start to get that way again for different things, I'm like, nope, I have seen a miracle happen the way our story ends up working out. And at the end of the book, I actually have a whole blog post. Some of my book is like blog posts that I blogged throughout the entire time. So you'll get those real moments there too. But part of it was that this happened on this date, 1 year later, this happened. So it lays it all out, and to see it laid out like that gives me chills still. And I lived it. So I'm just like, wow. It's one of those things where I did have somebody who reached out to me and said, you know, seeing it laid out like that gives me a little more faith that ours is going to work out. So hopefully if you read it and you need it, that it helps you. So
that's fantastic. And I really appreciate authors like yourself that are willing to, you know, expose their vulnerability in the essence of helping other people. And while it was therapeutic for you, this yes. is something that's going to help a lot of people. So
I hope so. I hope yeah. so.
Well, it was such a pleasure speaking with you today, Ashley, and thank you so
Me
much.
Too.
Thank you so
well,
much.
Thank you. I'm so excited. I'm thankful to be here, and this is my first actual podcast interview, so I hope I did okay.
You did great. You did great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow. That was probably the first time thus far that I have laughed and cried. Or started tearing up when I was interviewing somebody, and definitely touched some sore spots for me that are emotional. I really appreciate Ashley and just her vulnerability and putting herself out there that, like that, because there's so many people that could really benefit from her story. So I hope you pick up her book. Again, it is called A Beautiful Moon Waiting. You can pick it up at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And you can check out Ashley on Facebook. She's got two Facebook pages. One is called One Big Happy Family, Finally. And the other one is Ashley Banyan, Author. So definitely check those out. And while you're at it, please visit my website at sandyscarlotta.com for more information about my book, Happiness Solved, Climbing 100 Steps, which will also be available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. I also invite you to follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Coach Sandy Scarlotta. And again, all of these episodes will also be posted on the different various podcast networks, but also my YouTube page, which is also called Happiness Solved. Thank you again for listening today, and I hope that you stay healthy and safe and that your life is filled with joy and peace and happiness. Until next time, take care, everyone.